In a moment with David, we're going to go to the phones. It'll be interesting to see what you have to say about all of this. And the truth shall set you free. Surely it would. The only question is, what is the truth? You've got to answer that before you can be free. All right, once again, back to David Icke. David, before we go to phones, is there anything that, given the short time we've had, you have not been able to get on the air and want to get on the air before we do this?
Well, normally the questions take us in all these different other areas that because it's an amazing fact that once you see the structure and the agenda, virtually everything fits into it. Because what we're looking at is not actually a series of conspiracies and manipulations, but different aspects of the same one manipulation. And I would make this point, too. What I'm actually talking about, funnily enough, is not a conspiracy at its heart. It's an agenda. The conspiracy comes in three ways. One, removing those people and organizations that are a threat to that agenda becoming reality. Putting people into positions of political and economic power that will make that agenda become reality, and manipulating the mass of the people through problem, reaction, solution to get them to demand the agenda becomes reality even though they don't realize it exists. In other words, do something, centralization of power is the answer. So these apparently unconnected conspiracies are actually connected by one thing, and that is either a threat to the agenda being removed, someone will bring the agenda in being put into power, or problem, reaction, solution to bring the agenda in and have it demanded by the public. So these are one manipulation with many faces, not a series of unconnected ones.
All right. I would like to, if I can, then go to the phones and let people ask you some questions, see
fine.
How you deal with it. All right, fine.
Yeah.
Here we go. First time caller line, you're on the air with David Icke. Where are you, please?
Hello. My name's Alan. I'm in the Seattle area, and I'm listening to you on the Como 1000.
Of course.
And I have a question for David.
Hi, Alan.
Hi. I'd like to know if you know anything about Dr. Spock, you know, from the 50s. He was a psychiatrist.
The children guy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. No, I know nothing kind of directs on him, but in the general point, one of the things that I expose massively in the next book in February, The Biggest Secret, and other people have also done a lot of research into this area, is actually the Tavistock network in London. For historical reasons, London is a major, major center of this web. Not the government, which is just another facade string pulled from behind, but actually the center of this web, epicentered in London some centuries ago, and this is why they had the Great British Empire. It wasn't actually the British Empire, it was the empire of this group that had based itself in London, which is rather a different thing. And the Tavistock Institute is actually the center of the mind and mass consciousness manipulation web. They do tremendous research and have done for decades and decades, looking at what stimuli are needed to get a mass reaction of a certain kind. They also have worked with individual mind control. And getting to children very early has been a very, very big part of their operation and the whole manipulation, because if you can get them young, then you've got them for life. And interestingly, you know, these guys all over the world that keep going crazy with guns and killing children, like we had this guy Thomas Hamilton in Dunblane, who killed the children in the gymnasium, and we've had this guy Martin Bryant in Port Arthur, Australia. Well, the manifestations of these guys who go crazy with guns, and then, of course, you've got a problem. And what is the solution every time? Taking guns out of circulation. And what has happened is that we've got, after these events happen, we've got pulled into a debate of whether guns are good or guns are bad, which is a debate worth having. But the bigger debate at this time is this: why, in every country virtually I go into, has someone gone crazy with a gun in the street or whatever, and then the solution has been gun laws, taking guns out of circulation? Why is that happening everywhere now? And when you relate that to some of the things we've been discussing tonight on this show about the agenda coming up across the millennium, it's much easier to impose things on an unarmed population than an armed one. And what I've come across only this week is this guy, Martin Bryant, who went crazy with a gun. He killed 35 people, something like that, in Port Arthur just a few years ago. He was treated, quote, for psychiatric disorders by a guy called Dr. Cunningham Dax, who was a Tavistock operative in Australia and for many decades was a close associate of a guy called John Rawlings Reese, who was the inspiration from the start to create the Tavistock network of mind control research and imposition. So when you look at Jonesboro in this country and many other events where people do spectacularly off-the-wall things, we need to understand that it is possible to program the subconscious to do that, and then all it needs to activate is the trigger, and that subconscious programming becomes the conscious action. And to understand that is to understand many of the apparently inexplicable things that go on, and why, again, assassin after assassin and crazy man with a gun after crazy man with a gun is dubbed in the, with the same character profile, lone nutter, no conspiracy. And so the manipulation of children and the minds of the adult population is all part of this manipulation, because I said to Art, as I said to Art earlier, you cannot control billions of people physically. You have to do it through the mind and the emotions, and that's the way it's done.
So you believe that the philosophy that he put forth might have something to do with the chaos we're seeing now in children?
Yeah, I mean, I think we should let my personal opinion is that we should let children have access to all information, and we should encourage them to make their own mind up. And I think once we start playing with methods and processes and systems with children's minds in whatever way they are, we are already creating a prison situation instead of encouraging them to be free in their thinking. And I think there's a lot of people, you know, who talk about freedom and the need for freedom, and then when you talk about the way they bring up their children, they say, oh, well, of course I bring them up the way I believe. Well, that's not freedom, and I think we ought to put all information in front of everybody and then respect their right to come to what conclusions they want to come to instead of telling them what they should believe, which is what happens most of the time from cradle to grave.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Dave.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you for the call. And Wild Card Line, you're on the air with David Icke. Hi.
Hello.
Hello, where are you?
Yes, hi, this is Jeff. I'm calling from near Tampa, Florida.
And,
hey, Jeff.
And on a digital cellular phone in a vehicle.
Yes, sir.
See, I'm psychic. Go right ahead.
No, yeah, I knew you would like this phone. actually, my question is this. The gentleman, you were mentioning an agenda, and I was wondering if, you know, with the coming of the millennium and whatnot, if you suppose maybe this agenda could be from perhaps, you know, a higher power, like, you know, could this be in the big plan, you know, maybe God's plan, or could ultimately this be have something to do with, you know, the coming of the Antichrist, or, you know.
All right, David, are you there?
I'm still there, right, yeah.
All right, excellent. Here we go once again. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with David Icke. Hi.
Hello. I wanted to mention a magazine called Covert Action Quarterly, and it's put out by some former CIA and FBI agents who became so disgusted with the disinformation that were peddled constantly throughout the Cold War to justify non-existent and exaggerated foreign threats, especially on an anti-communist propaganda basis, to cover up with the fact that the real conspiracy is right here, designating as villains and demons anyone who disobeys the dictates of the transnational corporations and their police, secret police informers, such as the Central Intelligence Agency.
Okay, well, I will give you, caller, this. The CIA was said to have dramatically, perhaps even intelligently, overestimated the Russian threat for all those years.
Well, what I wanted to get to, Art, is the fact that I think right now we have a situation where the death head's face is being exposed in this attempt to visit genocide once again on Iraq after starving about 1.5 million people to death, demonizing Saddam Hussein. And I think the control of the media is essential to this. A book on reliable sources shows how the media has acted in demonizing varied characters different from each other, whether it's Castro or Saddam Hussein or the Serbs in Serbia. They have little in common except the fact that they have been uncooperative obeying the dictates of the transnational corporations, the International Monetary Fund, and have refused to align themselves with such agencies such as NATO, which your guest has mentioned, or the United States. Unlike, for instance, in Yugoslavia, where the Croats and the Muslims have opportunistically signed on with NATO and the International Monetary Fund, the Serbs have refused this privatization type of policy that has spelled such disaster in the Soviet Union, pushing 75% of the people into starvation and poverty. Yet this is, I think, the real motivating force behind these kinds of interventions to, in effect, tell Saddam Hussein, we will starve, bleed, and break your country and your people, not because of these weapons of mass destruction, because we've said that even if you obey all of these humiliating demands, we're still not going to stop starving and bleeding your people until you overthrow your government and put into power a submissive, subservient puppet.
I don't necessarily disagree with that, David.
Well, there's a list of things there which all interconnect. First of all, let me go back to what I said not too long ago. If you're going to control a game, you have to control both sides, or you're not going to control the outcome. So what we need to do, I feel, is stop looking at people on different sides of a conflict. What I mean is not the people in general, but the people in control of the people on different sides, and stop seeing them as opposing forces and start seeing them as different faces of the same organization. For instance, Saddam Hussein, long, long ago, was a member of a very elite secret society called the Safari Club, which CIA people were also members of. And the Safari Club spawned something in France called the Pinay Circle, or Le Cercle, which has done fundamental manipulation and terrorist activity in Europe, and not least in France. And they are a network that was almost certainly involved in the coordination of the assassination of Diana, Princess of Wales, which I expose in enormous detail in this book, The Biggest Secret, and massively connected to the royal family and other people. So when you look at a situation of Bush back in the first Gulf War against Saddam Hussein, we need to start looking at two faces of the same side. And the pawns in the game are the American people, which Bush was over, and the Iraqi people, which Saddam Hussein was over. Why did Bush, who condemned Hussein as the new Hitler, and actually Bush should know because his father, Prescott Bush, was one of the funders of Hitler through the Harriman Organization, well documented in my books and others. Why suddenly did he stop before he got to Baghdad? People were taken aback. What's going on here? Why has he completed the job?
I was
Why?
One of them, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Why? Because they wanted to keep that situation so they could play the card again. I mean, the call is absolutely right. Again, we come to creating fear. Once you get people in fear, they'll give their power away to anyone they think will protect them against what they fear. So you bring in Colonel Gaddafi, a threat to the world. Whatever happened to him? And then you get another monster, and then he'll disappear, and they'll bring another one forward. First of all, it was Russia. The call is absolutely right about the Cold War. I've talked to people in the intelligence community who were staggered to realize, because of course the intelligence community is fundamentally compartmentalized. Most people in the CIA are not trying to manipulate people. They think they're serving the country. Mm. Like all these organizations. They were staggered to realize during the Cold War that American intelligence at a high level was passing over weapon technology and know-how to the Russians, so the Russians would keep parity or, in an ideal world, slightly ahead of the West. Why? Because if you want to justify massive arms spending with your companies which you control, and you want to up the ante of fear, frightening the West against the East and the East against the West, then if Russia's miles behind you, then the fear is dissipated. What? Russians can't even hit America. We're not frightened of them. So you ensure that there is parity or the Russians are just ahead. And then you go, oh, my good, the Russians are ahead of us. Oh, my good, all fear. We must have more arms spending. We must increase our nuclear arsenal. And then cynically, the point came, and I actually predicted this in an earlier book, where the agenda's timescale, because it has a fundamental timescale, was to start to encompass the former Soviet Union countries into NATO and into the European Union, which is now happening.
Oh, yes.
But that could never happen while, in Reagan's words, the Soviet Union was perceived as the evil empire. So out of nowhere comes Mikhail Gorbachev, the first Russian leader in Russian history who didn't look like he'd just come back from a funeral. Suddenly, the wall comes down. Russia starts to have a smiling face, and bingo, the whole situation breaks up, allowing the encompassing into NATO and the European Union of these countries. Now, as I've shown in my previous books, Mikhail Gorbachev was a fundamental associate all the way through this, before he became president, of David Rockefeller and Henry Kissinger. What's Gorbachev doing now? He's running the Gorbachev Foundation, which puts on global events with top entertainers and top politicians calling for world government and world institutions to solve the problems of the world. It's all a movie. The CNN, I call it the movie channel. It's a movie we're watching, and we need to look behind the movie to see what's really going on.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with David Icke.
Hi.
Where are you?
This is Les in Honolulu, KVH Radio 830.
That's KHVH, yes.
KHVH Radio, yeah. With regards to the fundamental time scale you're talking about, I got two questions. One, going back in that time scale, 300 years, and then my second will be to present day. Back in the early 70s, when I attended the University of Virginia, I was taken aside by a friend who is an assistant history professor who said, let me tell you a few things I'm not allowed to teach. He told me I learned a lot about Thomas Jefferson and how his focus was basically decentralized government, moving away from what they were doing in Europe, centralized government and industrialized city centers, and to come over here and form a nation that was based on a decentralized government and an agrarian society. And what we had was a Revolutionary War, and the British couldn't do anything about it then. They lost. They tried again in the War of 1812. That didn't quite work. So they decided to move their banking operations to the Northeast United States. And then we had the Civil War, and they told us it was about slavery, but actually it was an economic war. It was a banking war. Mm-hmm. And then we lost our revolution, so to speak. So I would like to get your comment on that and then ask my second question.
Well, again, in the Biggest Secret, as well as other books, I've gone into great detail into this period of the American Revolution, 1776 and beyond. 1776 was a key year, and you know, I've been talking over the last few days on the phone briefly, but interestingly, with Richard Hoagland, who's come to the same conclusions. We've come to the same conclusions independently of how certain things happen at certain times, because we go back to the ancient world and we go back to this fundamental knowledge that's been sucked out of the public arena but is held at the levels of the controlling elite that I'm talking about, and that is the knowledge of cycles, sun cycles, etc., etc. Cycles which affect consciousness in certain ways, and energy flows which allow certain things to happen more effectively and more powerfully at certain times. So it's become very clear in my research that they don't have things happen in certain years, and they don't have hold summits at certain places at certain times unless it's fundamentally in sync with the cycles they understand, particularly sun cycles and the projections of energy from the sun. We, of course, and across the year 2000, there's tremendous solar activity projected.
Oh, yes.
And I'm sure that the Gregorian calendar syncing with that cycle is absolutely no coincidence whatsoever. But so 1776 was also the year that the Bavarian Illuminati was formed on May the 1st, which is one of their key ritual days of the year, run by a guy called Adam Weishaupt, who was then behind the French Revolution and many other revolutions in Europe. But I think it's so important that we suspend our dogma and we suspend our belief and we allow the information to lead us rather than our own preconceived ideas. And I've done a lot of research into the Founding Fathers, and I'm sure many of them had the best interests of people at heart, but some of them certainly didn't. And I'll name one, Benjamin Franklin. Benjamin Franklin was the Henry Kissinger of his day. He was working for British intelligence. He was very close to the British royal family. In fact, if you look at the history, this guy spent most of the time around the American Revolution, actually in London. He was a very close associate of a guy called Francis Dashwood, who ran a satanic ritual sacrifice operation called the Hellfire Club, which involved members of the royal family, which shouldn't surprise anyone because the present royal family is into all that stuff in Britain, as well as I'm about to expose in detail.
Franklin
was also a major Freemason in America, and he was a member of the key Freemasonry lodges in France. And he was playing all sides off against the center. And for me, when you look at this dispassionately, as I can as an Englishman in America, the American Revolution was to a very, very large extent an example of what I talked about earlier, replacing overt control, which had a finite life, because those colonies were going to rebel eventually, if not then eventually, with covert control. And I think that there are so many, and this can be shown, so many strings that pull the economic and political system of America are actually pulled from Europe, particularly London. And just to finish the Benjamin Franklin story, to say that he was involved in ritual sacrifice and all that stuff is extreme, and I understand that. But this probably wasn't reported in Britain. But earlier this year, a story broke in London, in the London papers. They've given a grant of about £1.5 million to restore and renovate Benjamin Franklin's former house in Craven Street in London near Trafalgar Square, where he lived during the time I'm talking about. When they got under the floor as part of the renovation, they found 10 bodies, 6 of them children, in which some, there's been some unpleasant things done to them. They've got holes in the skulls and stuff like that, and they've dated them to the time Benjamin Franklin was there, and the way that they've explained it, or tried to, is that Ben must have been into body snatching for medical research. Well, when you put that together with the Hellfire Club and that's infamous history and what it did in sacrificial chambers in a place called, or near High Wycombe, where Dashwood's estate was, then the whole thing starts to make sense, especially when these famous, world-famous people that are running the show today are into the very same ritual, and I can prove this
from
people who have been there and seen it.
David, because of the length of the question, length of the answer, and time left, I'm going to just jump in and ask you.
Okay.
You said Princess, you just went running right by this. Princess Di was assassinated.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to ask you who, because I don't want to be in trouble.
Right.
I'm going to ask you why.
Well, again, that would take around half an hour, but I'll summarize it briefly. I go into this in great detail in the book, and I've just got the opportunity to produce an hour, two-hour documentary explaining what happened. I've been to Paris, and I've really researched this, and it's interesting that if we had half an hour to talk about this, all the kind of strands that we've talked about over the last 3 hours come together in this thing. The symbolism, these people are massively into symbolism, and you can read them through their symbols. For instance, one of the key symbols of this group in their secret language is the lighted torch. And the lighted torch is, of course, held by the Statue of Liberty, which was given to New York by French Freemasons. And a replica of the Statue of Liberty is on an island in the River Seine in Paris.
That's right.
What did they do? It's a signature. When Kennedy was assassinated in Dealey Plaza, which was the scene of the first Freemasons' lodge in Dallas, and is a very big symbolic area in occult lore, the Freemasons, after the assassination, and it's still there, put an obelisk, which is an ancient symbol going back to very ancient times, Egypt and stuff, and on the top of that obelisk in Dealey Plaza, literally yards from where Kennedy died, they put a lighted torch, or a depiction of one. What did they put on Kennedy's grave? They put the lighted torch, the eternal flame. What is the the place, the ritual place, or the place of commemoration to Diana at the Pont d'Alma tunnel in Paris. It's a lighted torch. In fact, it's a replica on top of that tunnel of the flame held by the Statue of Liberty. What have they put on the island in Althorpe Park where Diana's said to be buried? They put a lighted torch. This is the signature, and you can read it. That's the main one, but there are many others. And when you look at the symbolism, when you go back through these bloodlines to the Merovingians in France, they were the people that created the city we call Paris. They worshipped an ancient goddess called the goddess Diana, who was a moon goddess, symbolic of the moon. When they created Paris, initially, they built on the outskirts of the original Paris, but very much within the modern Paris, sacrificial chambers where they sacrificed to the goddess Diana. That sacrificial underground chamber the Merovingians built in the 8th century, 7th, 8th century, and earlier, in fact, is now another underground chamber. It's the Pont d'Alma tunnel where Diana died. Pont d'Alma means passage or bridge of the moon goddess, which is what Diana was supposed to represent. And the reason, and this is why we've had this tremendous questioning of why someone with injuries that if they'd have been got to hospital quickly, she would have survived, why was she kept in that tunnel for 95 minutes before they moved to the hospital? The reason was, and, you know, it's a throwaway line here because of time, but I document this in enormous detail in The Biggest Secret. The reason they kept her there is she had to die there according to their ritual, because these people are so into ritual, it's staggering, and you can read them that way. And as I've explained in this Biggest Secret about the Kennedy assassination, you look at occult ritual, that was the symbolic assassination of the of a sun god, just as the assassination of Diana was the assassination of a moon goddess. And on the three-dimensional, non-symbolic way, I also completely connect it to the British royal family, who was fundamentally involved, and I name them, and it's time to stop running away, Art, and it starts time to start running at this.
So it's also time. It's also time to stop the program. We're out of time.
Okay.
Very quickly, and the truth shall set you free. The phone number to call right now is 1-800. You finish it.
321-9054. 1-800-321-9054, and it'll be in the post this morning if you ring now.
All right. Very good. I want you to stay on the line for a moment so I can get a more permanent phone number from you so we can do a future show. All right?
Okay.
David, it has been a pleasure.
Pleasure, Art. Thanks very much indeed.
Thank you, my friend. Stay right there, and I'll be back directly. Well, all right. That's it. If you would like a copy of this program, the entire 5 hours, and it's all been equally compelling, the number is 1-800-917-4278. That's 1-800-917-4278. And if you want your hair to stand on end, stay tuned for what comes next. I'm Art Bell.